T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 99 The Game from the Mobile Kia Studios on this Monday. We're getting ready for July to break, and we've been mentioning it throughout the day. And, of course, we'll talk a lot about it coming up here. But with all the sports that are going to break in July, we'll have the return of the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and, of course, Major League Soccer, which will be first up with Atlanta United and MLS. And then the camps for college football and the NFL, which will begin in just a couple of weeks for the colleges, and then toward the end of the month, I think on the 28th, I think is the NFL official date. And as we get towards camps, Hugh, we've been doing a lot of, off-season conditioning here virtually for all these teams. And I wanted to use your expertise because, you know, being a former player for 10 years and for playing for the game for your whole life, there are a bunch of questions I have regarding this off-season conditioning and how this is all going to work, a little bit, you know, for colleges, but mostly for the NFL. And it kind of goes to whether or not this is going to be a problem for this particular league. There's a story that was out over the weekend, and let me just bring it up to the Baltimore. Apparently the Baltimore Ravens, Hugh, I don't know if you saw this story, but apparently the Baltimore Ravens have the most difficult offseason training of any team in the NFL.
Mm.
And so much that the rookies are joking about how bad it is on Twitter, and about how exhausted they are after going through this regimen that they've been going through. Lamar Jackson said he replied with a gift from the King of Queens, with Kevin James falling on his face from being exhausted. Here is the test that the Ravens have to go through. Players must run a total, these are the Ravens players now, a total of 900 yards in 6 legs. Each set consists of 25 yards out and back 3 times. They must finish that heat, a heat of 150 yards out and back 3 times in under 32 seconds for offensive and defensive linemen, 29 seconds for tight ends, 27 seconds for wide receivers and running backs and whatnot. If you go over that time in any of the 6 legs, you flunk the test and have to take it over. So you've got to do this under 32 seconds. So it's out 25 yards and back, okay, done 3 times. And for a defensive lineman, under 32 seconds. And then you have to do that 6 times and be under 32 seconds each of the 6 times, or otherwise you flunk. Man.
Yeah, that sounds like we used to do that with the Eagles, half gassers. That's what it sounded like. And everybody had a time. And whatever weight class you were in or class, that was your time. That's because of, and I think that's probably the reason why they're doing that, because they haven't had a chance to see everybody, John. They haven't had an off-season workout plan, and they want to know where your fitness is. You know, and I remember when Coach Reed used to do it, if you didn't pass, you couldn't practice until you passed it. So, yeah, that's what that's for. I mean, that sounds pretty familiar.
The break between each set is 64 seconds. By the end of it, players are sprawled on the ground, the story says, trying to catch their breath. Pro Bowl safety Earl Thomas said he nearly threw up after completing it. Running back, former running back Justin Forsett said going through it is, quote, pure death.
Yeah, because they're not in shape yet. That's what it's for, is trying to get you back in shape.
So this thing that John Harbaugh does, I'm curious on a number of fronts here from workouts, because as we go into the NFL training camps, you know, conditioning is one thing. Do you consider today's players, more hardened because they spend so much more time working out on their own than they did, you know, back in the day, like when you were first coming up or even before you came up? Or are today's players softer? I mean, is there a difference between the players, say, of 2020 and the players of 20 years ago?
I would say, yeah, John, because, number one, practice is different, you know? I mean, which is the way that they negotiated it. Practices are different. You know, you hear a lot of pundits say that the game is played a lot different than it was back in the day. I mean, you know, that's with advancements of technology and all that, you know? So it is a different game. It's a lot different.
Yeah, there's far less hitting that takes place in practice in a lot less contact. Is that generally in your, you know, I think that the thought, I think some people think, that the less hitting in contact in practice is because players just don't want to hit in practice. But I think what the players are trying to say is that we don't want to get injured in practice.
I look at it like this. And, you know, a lot of people complain about the way that the poor tackling that is being done in the NFL nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of that comes from the fact that you don't hit as much. You know, you don't have as much contact. But I get it. It's one of those things where they're trying to make the game safer. They're trying to keep guys from getting hurt. But, you know, when your job is to be in the trenches and you're trying to get different angles and things of that nature and the proper angles to tackle people, you have to be able to do that on a daily. You have to be able to do that somehow in practice. And the only way that I know how you do that is you go through 9-on-7 and you go through those live team drills, which they really don't do anymore. So that's why, you know, the tackling game has diminished as much as it has over the past few years. But at the same point, at the same time, guys are fresher. They're trying to be fresher for the game. And, you know, you have a lot of people say that it's not as technically sound as it once was, you know, as far as the tackling and stuff is concerned. But, you know, the NFL, the last time I checked, NFL is not losing any money mm-hmm. on anything. You know, players aren't playing as long as they used to, even though they negotiated it. They negotiated these deals to try to, you know, make the long, you know, lengthen their career. Doesn't really seem like it's worked out that way, John.
Yeah,
it
doesn't seem like it's worked out that way in certain positions. I mean, obviously the move to protect quarterbacks and reduce the number of hits that are on quarterbacks probably has lengthened that position a little bit here. But I'm just kind of curious here, too, because you could kind of take me inside this bubble here. Because I've been always torn, you know, watching the game that, you know, that I've watched, you know, as closely as I have for as long as I have, as to whether or not, you know, the reduction in hitting in practice, you know, that there's a toughening that happens, because it seems like, you know, some of the teams that have run really difficult practice sessions over the past and in the past have been the teams that have been kind of coming out the toughest when it came to playing the game. They were more battle-tested because they were going hard against each other, and then they got into the game and it wasn't such a big deal. But I can never figure out, Hugh, whether less hitting or more hitting in practice is the one that's more beneficial in terms of the amount of exposure to potential injury in practice as opposed to, you know, the amount of game readiness that you get on the field during the game itself. So I really don't know.
You know what, John? I don't know either, because I've you know, the successes that I've had, you know, the training camps have been pretty challenging. You know, the success that I've had in the NFL, training camps have been pretty challenging. I don't know any other way. You know, I mean, there's a certain level of hitting. There's a certain amount of hitting that goes along with, you know, being ready on Sunday. And, you know, as far as being battle hardened and everything, I don't know what the Baltimore Ravens training camp was last year, but you know, under the circumstances and under the rules under which everybody has to adhere to when it comes to training camp, they were a physical team. They were a very physical team. And I would venture to say that some of that has to do with the mentality of the coach and things of that nature. I mean, you know, the football is physical, but it's all the mentality too. And you know, most teams take on the characteristics of the head coach. If he's a hard-nosed guy, they'll probably play that way. So it's one of those things. I don't know how it is to play on a squad where you didn't really practice hard. I don't know what that's like. Now, Coach Reed, when I played with him, we would have 3 days of hell. That's what we called it, 3 days of hell, where you banged for 3 straight days. You banging, like wide open, everything, 9-on-7, Skelly, all of that. And after that, then you would have 1 day on, 1 day off, and then, you know, in between those practices, you had two solid practices, and then one practice in the morning, and then we would have what you call a 10-10-10 to give your body a chance to rest. But those days that we had those pads on, we were practicing. We were practicing hard, and that's what it was. And now, from my understanding, nowadays, the teams don't have as many padded practices as they once had. But with that being said, when they do put those pads on, I'm assuming that Coach Harbaugh is like this as well, that when you put those pads on, they want you to practice hard. So that's probably where the mentality for the hard-nosed players come from, because, you know, when you put those pads on, it's not country club time. It's time to get to work.
Now, notwithstanding the fact that those two teams happen to have exceptionally talented young quarterbacks in Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, you're talking about the Ravens and the Chiefs. That's the two teams you talked about. Who was in the AFC Championship game last year? I mean, or I guess the Ravens didn't make it. But, you know, I mean, in terms of number one and number two seeds in the AFC last year, those two teams. And so, you know, maybe there's something to be said for some of that old school stuff, if that's what it's going to be, because if it's obviously it's successful on a team level to some degree, or they wouldn't have been the first two seeds.
Yeah, but and I also know that Coach Reed's philosophy, and it's probably Coach Harbaugh's philosophy too, you practice hard during the beginning of the season, and as the season progresses, you pull it back, but you still maintain that level of speed and tenacity during the course of the week. You know, but you scale back a little bit, and it's done in a way so that, you know, it's not a big shock to your body. You know, because I do remember, you know, what was said about Coach Reed's team as the season progressed is that they usually got stronger and they played better as the season went on. And I think that's the philosophy, or that's what most coaches try to get out of every team that they coach, is that you want to start peaking in like October, November, you know, October, December, something like that, some around that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's when you want to start peaking, because that's, you know, playoff time and all the other good stuff. You're getting ready for a playoff run, hopefully, if you're in that position.
Right. If the Falcons had just played better in the first half of last year, even for a couple of games, they may have been peaking towards the playoffs last year in the season that they had last year.
Yeah.
What positions, by and large, we're just picking Hugh's brain a little bit about practice on this story of the Baltimore Ravens and this, they run gassers, Death Valley things where they have to time things, and some of the former players are saying that this particular exercise is pure death, according to Justifer Said and others. Who say it's really hard to do and it's really difficult here. But what positions, by and large, you won? Because we're dealing with such an unknown in this season with no practice yet, all virtual practices. We're not going to get to a practice until the 28th of July for another month here. What position is going to be, you know, notwithstanding new players coming in, what position, by and large, is the one that needs the most reps in practice?
That all depends on who you're talking to, John. I would say that when you talk about offenses and everything, I think the receivers and the quarterback, the timing, because that's all like a dance that you got to choreograph with the offensive line and the quarterback with his steps and everything. So I think that's the position, those two positions, because they need to be on the same page, because you need to know where the quarterback is setting. You need to understand where he's going to be at certain points on the field. You know, whatever, you know, if it's a 5-step drop, 7-step drop, or whatever, you need to understand all of that. And that comes with getting those reps and working with one another. So I would say those two groups. I would say the D-line, too. You know, when you talk about doing stunts and things like that, I would say bottom line is this, John, offensive and defensive lines. Those are the guys that are probably going to need the most work, because that's something that when you talk about running games and stunts and stuff like that, that's all timing stuff. So I would say those two groups probably need the most work.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking. I mean, I understand that the receiver, you know, quarterback combination, you can kind of work on that even if you're not working a full team. But when you're talking about, you know, not being able to hit or less hitting here and having to, you know, figure out, you know, how do you, you know, maintain your gap on the defensive line, not allow for, you know, players to be gashed, not get sucked up field and allow people to, you know, take advantage of that. And all that coordination, it seems to me that the line play, you want to talk about a dance, it's got to be coordinated. Those two lines have got to be coordinated. Yeah, that's what it strikes me as. Rather run gassers like this, Hugh, or would you rather do the Oklahoma drill?
Oh, Oklahoma drill. No, I run the gas. I never had a problem. I never had a problem running the gas, so I could run the gas. I could definitely run the gas, because that's the one thing that I was always afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always I would be prepared to run the gas. I'm good with those.
Some of the NFL headlines around the corner as we start to peek towards July and the beginning of football and all that kind of good stuff. We'll bring you up to speed next. It's John and Hugh in the mornings on Sports Radio 92 on the game as we continue after a CBS Sports Minute.
He makes good decisions. He can run. He's strong. He's hard to tackle. he can do a lot of different things, beat you in a lot of different ways. We saw that in the game down there in 13. So he's, I would put him in the top of the list. Not saying the other guys aren't a problem, because they are. But he'd be public enemy number one.
That was Bill Belichick a couple, 3 years ago talking about Cam Newton, about how, you know, Cam was such a handful as a quarterback to deal with. And now, of course, Bill Belichick has him this mold of clay here for Cam 2.0. And if Cam's healthy, it'll be interesting to see how this all works out. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Cam Newton now a Patriot. I just noticed, Hugh, that this doesn't take Las Vegas long. They have updated the odds in Las Vegas to make Cam Newton the overwhelming favorite to win NFL Comeback Player of the Year.
Is that right? I mean, yeah, I can see that. He's going to be put in a position to have success. Not saying that Coach Rivera, you know, didn't use him correctly, but I think that Bill Belichick, when you look at his past when it comes to advanced players, older players, he does a tremendous job with them in putting them in a position to be successful.
And it's really it's almost a no lose situation for the New England Patriots, because at the moment the worst thing, you know, he comes into camp, he doesn't make it or whatnot, he's got an incentive laden contract and they end up cutting him, they'd be out like maybe $1 million. You know, there was a story I read this morning that's, let's not forget that the Patriots paid Antonio Brown, they paid Antonio Brown $9 million for all of one game. And so, I mean, they really have nothing to lose. I think this is all upside for the New England Patriots, in my opinion. So I think it's a brilliant move. I think a move that we all expected all along, in a way, if he was going to be picked up prior to the season starting, was, it seemed to be that New England was the positive place. But Belichick kept saying, no, I got Jarrett Stidham. So what happened to I got Jarrett Stidham?
I guess they were looking at film. And, you know, they were, you know, you hear about the doctor's the diagnosis for Cam, you know, the fact that they said he was healthy. And I was like, hey, man, what would it hurt? What would it hurt to bring in Cam Newton and have him work out for us and get him on $1 million deal for a quarterback? That's pretty cheap for that position when you talk about, you know, what that position usually commands. So, yeah, that was a pretty smart move on his behalf.
The NFL, by the way, it is interesting. And so there are a lot of people out here, some people, who are really conspiracy theorists, who are looking at the fact that yesterday it just so happens on the day that the Patriots announced they are signing Cam Newton to suck the oxygen out of the room, that the NFL also came down with its ruling against the Patriots for illegally filming the sideline of the Cincinnati Bengals. The NFL fined the Patriots $1.1 million. They took away a third-round pick in the upcoming draft, and lose the ability for their production crew to film during the 2020 season coming up here, all as a result of them illegally taping the sidelines of the Cincinnati Bengals, which, if you think about it, Hugh, I mean, you can illegally tape something and get caught doing it. The Cincinnati Bengals, really? Nonetheless, the Patriots, the Cheatriots, this ruling comes out, and then the Cheatriots immediately say, oh, yeah, let's do the Cam Newton deal. And so people out there going, all right, we see what you're trying to do here.
But it did exactly, if that's what you're thinking it did exactly that, though, because nobody's really talking about it. So smart on their behalf. You know, they changed the narrative, you know, because now everybody's talking about Cam Newton and potentially what he could be there with the Patriots. I mean, I think there's something to that. Everything is done for a reason. I think the timing is perfect. You know, I think that for Cam, it was something that they were thinking about, but they kind of probably wanted to wait because they knew this news was coming out and they wanted to change the narrative, and they did exactly that. So, touche to Coach Belichick.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did. Doesn't change the fact that they got fined and they're going to lose a third-round pick, and we're just going to chalk this up to another piece of Patriots cheating. So, we'll note that. That'll be on the ledger, as they say, under Bill Belichick. In the meantime, there's another story here. Again, some of the headlines of the NFL. The NFL Players Association is mad at Tom Brady and at Russell Wilson. And DeMaurice Smith saying that he's not happy that these two guys are out there practicing with their teammates, not because there's anything illegal about practicing with your teammates, but these two have been publicly doing it, and he wants them to stop these workouts, even though the teams are obviously going to get together at the end of July. He wants them to stop the workouts because he's afraid of, you know, there are no protocols for potentially dealing with the virus, Hugh. And so he thinks that this is just too dangerous in a season that's looming for the NFL, for Russell Wilson or Tom Brady, or for that matter anybody else, but those two especially, because they've been public about it, to end these workouts that they're doing individually, because there is no protocols in place.
Yeah, it's funny. I was listening to the radio this weekend, and I was listening to a radio show, and they were talking about this exact same thing and how reckless this is, and the fact that Tom Brady is on there quoting FDR talking about the only thing to fear is fear itself. I never looked at it that way, John. I looked at it as a guy who used to play football, who looked at a bunch of guys getting ready for the NFL season. But I guess that's not the way that you look at it, especially when you talk about Tom Brady and being the leader that people see him to be. And the fact that you're out there basically saying that, if you're like, what are you afraid of? Like basically being reckless. Like, if you're not prepared, you're being scared or whatever, instead mm-hmm. of being smart. So I get it. I definitely get that. And I understand he's getting ready for football season, but I never looked at it from that lens before. And it is kind of like, poo-pooing on everybody else in a time where, everybody's a little bit sensitive about this. There's a lot of stuff that has divided this country, but that has divided it as well, whether or not to wear a mask or whether or not to be, go outside with one on, I think I said that right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's the point. That has been a hot button topic for a lot of people. You've seen it when you go out, people that don't wear masks are looked at a certain way, and people that do wear masks are looked at a certain way. So, yeah, this is a definitely hot-button topic. And for those two guys to be out there as reckless as they are doing what they're doing, that's rubbing some folks the wrong way.
Another hot-button topic, of course, as always, is money. Adrian Peterson was talking about money this weekend. He was talking about how much money running backs make or don't make anymore in the NFL, because it's a position where the salaries have actually gone down. And Adrian Peterson was addressing that, and here's what he said.
It's disrespectful, to be honest with you. It really is, but I think a change is going to come. I think this young core of guys, me and Frank Gore, we continue to show guys that, hey, we are valuable. We can have 10, 14-year career as well. So, value us as well like you would value a quarterback.
Man, listen, I hear what he's saying, but him and Frank Gore are anomalies when it comes to playing as long as they play, because for every, for the Frank Gores and Adrian Peterson out there, you got like 10 Eddie Georges. You know what I'm saying? And I just use him as an example, because Eddie George was a running back that his star burned bright when he was in the NFL, but it burnt out quickly. Sean Alexander, another guy that was like that. Steven Davis, The list just goes on and on, man, of running backs that once they hit a certain plateau. Shady McCoy. What is this, Shady McCoy? Ninth season or something like that? I mean, it's guys, and you look at Shady. Shady's been a good back, but they just burn out quickly because they're used a lot. Ty Gurley. I know we wanted, we're trying to get something out of him here in Atlanta, but come on now, folks. Let's be real. Ty Gurley ain't the running back that he was when he came into the NFL. He's still a good running back. Not saying that he's not, but he ain't the cat that he was when he first came into the NFL. Still got some good miles on him, but he ain't the dude that got drafted as high as he got drafted when the Rams got him. And that's just the nature of the beast. That's why most running backs, when it comes to them getting their money, they try to get that money quickly and as quick as possible.
Yeah, I get, that AP thinks it's disrespectful. I don't think it has anything to do with respect. I think it has to do with business. I mean, what's the, if you had told somebody 25 years ago that, potentially the second highest paid position in all of the NFL was going to be left tackle of the offensive line, they would have laughed at you. What do you mean? An offensive lineman's going to be that high paid? Yeah, because it's that critical.
Yeah, and it's the longevity. Got those tackles and quarterbacks. When you look at it, on average, play the longest. And every now and then, you might get a couple D linemen in there that might give you 15 years, 12, 13 years. But everybody has a cap on them. Everybody has like that's the stuff that Thomas Dimitroff and guys like that don't tell you, is that they have like every position has a certain shelf life and how they view how long a person can play at a certain level. That's just how it is. That's the game. And certain positions are more coveted than others. Quarterback is one of them. You look at all these quarterbacks that have been recycled. Matt Schaub has been around a long time. Hasn't been a starter, but still is a serviceable backup that's still making a ton of bread. Running backs, what, 2 or 3 years at the most? You know, you might have some that break that mold, but not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot. And when those guys are like that, they'll pay them. But, yeah, not for the most part. It's unfortunate that's how it is, but that is what it is.
Yeah, it's that position, and the fact that it's not really a running back heavy league anymore. It's a, you know, it's a throwing league. It's, you know, the new hybrid running back, the Christian McCaffrey kind of world that we live in. We have a pick six coming up. It's always fun to do the Abe pick six because it always gets a little bit, well, unusual, a little bit different, a little bit, and it has to do with Heisman Trophy winners. Let's put it that way. We'll do it next as we continue this Monday edition of the Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the game. And, of course, we broadcast 24/7, 365 worldwide. If the app is free, just get it and download it in the App Store for radio.com.
Game.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game from the Mobile Kia Studios. It is time to try to pick Abe's brain here. The pick six is coming up, and always interesting, Hugh, to try to resolve the differences that Abe has in the way he thinks with I don't know, just about anybody else.
Yeah, he's a special breed, no question about that. But that's why he's our Abe.
He is our Abe. All right, so Abe, you've got the a Heisman Trophy kind of pick six today. Walk us through this one.
Yeah, a couple guys that have won the Heisman in the news recently. Obviously, we've talked about Cam Newton. We know what he is in the news for. Johnny Manziel also came out. Unfortunately, according to him, I think the football career may be over. Probably not according to him. It's probably according to the people who signed players. They decided his football career was over. But it got me thinking. So go ahead and pull out your cheat sheet, Hugh Douglas. Go ahead and look
that
up.
That does not bother Abe. You're not shaming me. I mean, I know what you're trying to do, but I'm not.
No, I'm saying you should have a cheat sheet for this one.
Okay.
Because this is a list of Heisman winners since 2000. So the last 20 Heisman winners. I want you to tell me the six. And I thought Thursday's list was easy. This one's got to be the easiest we've ever done. The six Heisman winners since 2000 that have had the worst NFL careers.
You notice that, you know, he didn't go to the best card. He wants to shame people.
Oh, the worst careers.
The best one's actually a tough discussion. This one should be pretty
right.
Easy.
Did Joe Harrington win the Heisman? Or was he was in the running for the Heisman?
You see, Hugh, this is why I told you to pull up that
see,
list.
It ain't no need for you to get smart. It was a question.
So we don't.
It was a question. It was a question.
That'd be a no. That'd be a negative.
Johnny, okay, you obviously Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel is on the list. Now, look, I mean, he played. He started some games. I was in Cleveland when he first came, and boy, the hype train was real with him. No matter what actual analysts and scouts and people who knew what they were talking about felt about him, mm-hmm. Boy, the hype train from the fans was real. So the disappointment that has now finished his career, Johnny Manziel is one of the six Heisman winners since 2000 with the worst NFL careers. That's correct.
And again, this doesn't diminish their Heisman because Johnny Manziel was certainly worthy of winning the Heisman Trophy. It is a college award, and some guys just
it's a little different.
Our college
it's a little different,
and,
yeah.
And honestly, this just doesn't diminish their pro careers. I mean, we're talking about guys, and most of these guys are quarterbacks. Not surprising. We're talking about guys that played quarterback at the NFL level, whether they succeeded or not. I mean, it's you know, the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of right. quarterbacks that reach that level. So, I mean, they, look, someone's got to be the worst player in the NFL, you know, but you're still an NFLer. So, you know, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, and that's what distinguishes this because, I mean, for example, you're talking about since the year 2000 here and that Johnny Manziel's on the list. Now, Eric Crouch wouldn't be on your list because he never played quarterback in the NFL, obviously. I mean, he never even made the NFL.
I never said quarterbacks.
Well, I thought you were talking about quarterbacks.
No, I just said Heisman winners.
Oh, Heisman winners. Okay. All right. I thought you were talking about quarterbacks. Okay, so Heisman winners. Well, then Troy Smith's got to be on that list.
Troy Smith is on that list, and I'm going to give you Eric Crouch as well, who's also on the list.
But he never played in the NFL, did he?
He kind of was on the Rams.
Don't think he ever made the team.
Kind of on the Rams. I don't think so. That's why his NFL career wasn't. But he signed a contract. That counts.
Okay.
So Eric Crouch, and now Eric Crouch did go on to play some other professional leagues and stuff, the Omaha Nighthawks and whatnot. Troy Smith, as you mentioned, I think started in Baltimore and then kind of bounced around a couple years, but not too much going on with his career. So Troy Smith, Eric Crouch, and Johnny Manziel, we are 3 for 3, not counting that Joey Harrington guess.
Matt Leiner won the Heisman, didn't he?
He did. And he probably was 7th, I think, on this list. He, you know, but he had an okay NFL career. It wasn't great. I wouldn't call it successful. But I also don't think his NFL career was a complete debacle the way that most of these other guys kind of went.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting. I'm going to try and pick your brain. I see two more on this list from 2000 on that certainly make your list. The other one is going to be really interesting. So let's just get the two that are going to make your list out of the way. Jason White.
Yes.
And
just like that, yes.
And Chris Winkie.
Yeah, both of those guys, you're right, John, are on the list. I mean, Jason White, of all the guys on the list, he's the one I don't believe ever actually saw an NFL roster. Even Eric Crouch was at least on the roster. Jason White went undrafted. Only 3 Heisman winners had ever gone undrafted. He was the 3rd. 2 previously, one of them being Charlie Ward, who we know went on to have a very successful career in the NBA. That's why he wasn't drafted. Another one, John, you may remember. I don't remember the year, but he chose a military career as opposed to playing football. So Jason White, who actively wanted to play football, is the only Heisman to not be drafted that was actually trying to get drafted. So Jason White on there. And then Chris Winkie, obviously a great career in college and just, you know, just didn't do much in the pros and eventually got replaced. And I think he won his first start with Carolina and then went 0-15 after that. I think that's how his first season went, so not great. We have Chris Winkie, Eric Crouch, Jason White, Troy Smith, Tim Tebow. This is the pick 6 of Heisman winners since 2000 with the worst NFL career. John, you mentioned you had one other guy that could be in this discussion, but you said it's an interesting debate. So
I don't get another
unless
guess.
Hugh wants to jump in. Hugh, would you
Ty
like
Detmer.
To jump in?
Ty Detmer.
Ty Detmer is not since 2000.
Ty Detmer won it in 01, didn't he?
Ty Detmer?
No, Ty Detmer won it like way long ago. He
okay.
was like in the 80s.
My bad. Okay.
That'd be 1990.
Okay, my bad. Yeah, that was a while ago. My bad.
Decade off. Yeah. Hugh, I told you to pull up the cheat sheet, brother. What are you giving me Ty Detmer for?
You know what? You don't have to leave me alone.
I told you to pull up the last one. This wasn't even like stop going to Twitter for guests. I literally told you to pull up the list so we ain't guessing guys like Joey Harrington and Ty Detmer. Hey, Hugh, you want to guess someone from the 84 season?
How about
that?
Hey, how about, you know what? That's enough. That's enough of you.
Yeah, discounting the guys who have just been.
Wow, really? And you're just going to go – you're going for the kill, huh? You're just going in for the kill.
John Fricke, you had a guess that you thought might be right.
No, it's between 3 guys. I mean, I think you can make years. A case – yeah, you can make a case for all 3 of the players, and I'm trying to figure out which one might be in your brain.
I had a tough time. I did not want to put this player, which may give you two big names. I'm going to say
it's RG. I'm going to say RG3.
Somebody said Tim
okay,
Tebow.
Okay, understandable. It's not RG3. RG3, his career, it's tough because I think he was sidelined more by the injuries and a little bit by style of play than he was. But I think he had an okay career with Washington for a while. And that's an interesting discussion. I kind of thought about him, but Hugh mentioned the guy that's actually on the list.
Tim Tebow?
Hugh, would you like to Tim Tebow.
Wow.
And John, you're right. There is a discussion probably between RG3 and Tebow. RG3 is still in the league, at least, albeit as a backup. You know, Tebow's a tough one because it was a short career. The stats were questionable.
Took him to a playoff.
He not only did take him there, John, he won a playoff game. And he's got one of the more, I would say, look, Elway's Super Bowl runs are what they are, but he had one of the more memorable moments in Broncos history in terms of that pass to Demaryius Thomas in overtime to win a playoff game. I mean, that's not an insignificant moment for an NFL quarterback. So, obviously, on the whole, the career was a massive failure, but it wasn't without its moments. And that's kind of the way I looked at RG3 as well. You know, his career was not without those moments, and he was a bright spot for a bad Redskins team for a while before it kind of fell apart for him. So I went Johnny Manziel, Tim Tebow, Troy Smith, Jason White, Eric Crouch, Chris Winkie, no Joey Harrington, and no Ty Detmer either.
You know, just refreshing my memory from the Heisman winners from 2000 to today, to me, the best, I really don't think there's much of a debate that Cam Newton's the best. Honestly, I mean, because there's no other player on here who has achieved what he achieved. MVP, takes his team to a Super Bowl. Nah, there's nobody on here. Reggie Bush had a nice career. You know, Mark Ingram was a good running back. No, there's nobody on here for me. Lamar at the moment, but Lamar still has to prove it. But that's just my thoughts here. All right, we're going to be talking about... A lot of discussion here as we get back to playing sports again with July looming. One of those discussions is what they were talking about LeBron and the NBA and what the NBA is looking at as far as free agency and more. Some of that discussion next as we continue on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 90.9 The Game and worldwide at radio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.